Warning, this podcast discusses topics that are known to trigger those suffering from PTSD, depictions of sexual abuse, abuse of a child, and many other forms of trauma, as well as the results of such. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, warriors, to the Ginger Veteran Podcast. I'm your host, Fred Gregory. The title of the show pays homage to my military service, which is something I am very grateful to have the opportunity to have done. This show is a platform to amplify the voices of those who have seen trauma, who are struggling through mental health. I want to share your story. I want to share your success. I want to share your failures. There's two ways you can share your story on the podcast. Go to www.thegingerveteranpod.com, request an interview, or share your story anonymously. Your story will be featured on an episode of the podcast, but your name will not be tied to the story. The story will be shared for you and everyone else to hear, so everyone knows that they are not alone. You are not alone. You are out here with a bunch of other warriors fighting your mental health battle, whether people know about it or not. Again, www.thegingerveteranpod.com. Go to contact us, either request an interview or share your story. Enjoy the episode.
Misfits Motorsports was born out of a passion for racing and a deep commitment to supporting the veteran community. Transitioning out of the military can be one of life's toughest challenges, and finding a new sense of purpose can feel overwhelming. That's why Misfits Motorsports is dedicated to using the power of motorsports as a platform for meaningful change. At the heart of their mission is the 22-A-Day Initiative, a campaign that brings attention to the heartbreaking reality of veteran suicide. But they're not stopping at awareness. Misfits Motorsports is creating real opportunities for veterans to rebuild their sense of purpose, reconnect with others, and develop new skills that can change lives. And it's about more than just racing. Misfits Motorsports is about bringing people together, veterans, their families, and supporters, to create lasting opportunities that benefit everyone. Through programs like their Driver Development Program, Co-Driver Program, Pit Crew Program, and Mini Misfits Racing Team, Misfits Motorsports ensures that every role on and off the track is valued and supported. Whether it's mentoring a young racer, preparing vehicles for race day, or cheering each other on at the track, these shared experiences build strong bonds and foster a sense of belonging that extends far beyond the finish line. But the mission doesn't end at the track. Misfits Motorsports is building pathways for veterans to thrive in careers across industries like plumbing, electrical work, construction, sales, social media, and more. They're forging strong partnerships to ensure veterans have the tools, mentorship, and opportunities they need to succeed, not just for themselves, but for their families. Misfits Motorsports isn't just creating jobs. They're building a foundation for growth, support, and a community that veterans and their loved ones can count on. It's about racing with a purpose and driving change for those who've served. If you'd like to get involved or learn more about the amazing work Misfits Motorsports is doing, visit them at misfitsmotorsportsllc.com. Together we can make a difference for our nation's heroes. That's Misfits with a Z, MotorsportsLLC.com, or MisfitsPerformance.myshopify.com.
Thank you.
Guys, welcome to the very first episode of the Ginger Veteran Podcast. I'm Nobody and this is my story, part one. I really appreciate all the love and the support that I've gotten to this point. If you're here listening, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this podcast. If it's the last episode that you hear because it just isn't for you, I really appreciate you giving it a shot. So, just to kind of build the background for what this podcast is and what this podcast is going to be, it's future state. It's going to be a platform for people to share their story, to amplify their voice, to be able to talk about their mental health struggles, to be able to talk about the trauma that they've lived with, and to be able to find ways to cope. And, you know, I'm going to be able to share my story and my experiences and kind of what's helped me through a lot of my mental health, right? There's been a huge, huge portion of me that has kind of felt like there's a hole in the mental health. There's a gap in the mental health industry, and no fault of most of the providers out there that are trying to help people with mental health. Most of the programs that are trying to help people with mental health, there's not really a lot of fault on them. They're trying. There's not a lot of people out there who are getting into this field and trying to help people. But there are some people who are doing it for the right reasons, and they really want to help people, and they really want to get out there and try and make people better one person at a time. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about in this podcast. And we're going to try and, share some experiences from other people, not just myself. And I'm really looking forward to doing this, developing it, making it bigger than anything. If I reach one person, I've met my goal, right? This is a passion project. This is something I'm really, really passionate about. And I really, really want to do. And I think that it's really important to get out there and highlight and amplify those voices and talk about trauma and talk about stuff that's uncomfortable. You know, nobody wants to talk about that shit. Nobody really does. I mean, I didn't want to talk about it. The first time I talked about it, I cried. I cried like, I cried like a baby. I cried like a bitch, whatever you want to say. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, I guess you would say. I've learned over time that it's gotten easier and easier to talk about my story and to tell my story and to talk about what I've been through and to talk about how I did or did not cope with, growing up in an abusive household. With that being said, I also want to make a note that this isn't a huge production, right? It's just me. It's myself. I do all the recording. I do all of everything. Mainly, when you hear these, you're going to hear some mistakes that are in here. And that's because I don't want to do a lot of editing to this, right? I want it to be raw. I want it to feel like I'm sitting here in front of you telling you this story, and I hope that it resonates with you. And, you know, if you're already successful with your mental health journey, that's awesome, right? I think it's great. But maybe when you hear this, maybe it'll kind of help you get the courage or drive you to help other people if you're not already doing that. Or if you're struggling with mental health, maybe it'll help you realize, hey, I'm not alone. This guy's going through it. You know, people who interview on the show or people who share their stories anonymously, maybe you'll hear that too. And maybe this will help drive some change. That's the ultimate goal here, is to try and help people and to try and make the mental health crisis a little bit easier to deal with. That's the whole reason why I'm here. And I hope that, you know, somebody somewhere gets touched by this message and they feel it and they make a change and they're able to help themselves, right? This podcast is going to be different than anything that I think is out there on the market right now. You know, there's a lot of podcasts that talk about mental health, but this podcast itself, the entire thing is dedicated to mental health. This podcast is dedicated to helping those with mental health. This podcast is dedicated to sharing other stories, right? And I think the title of this episode is probably one that resonates with me very well. You know, I'm nobody and this is my story, right? I'm not somebody out here making millions of dollars with a huge stage that I'm sending out a message to. This is me. I'm just regular, average, everyday Joe out here trying to make a living, trying to take care of my family. So I think that resonates with a lot of people, and I think I'll be able to help a lot of people with this. Listen to me, I sound like I'm doing a job interview. So let's get off of this and move on to the actual episode itself. So just to kind of, remind you, you're going to hear mistakes. I'm not a public speaker. I'm not really good at this stuff. Again, this is just me just sitting here talking. And telling my story and going through, everything that I remember as a child and all my childhood memories and all my traumas. This is me being raw, being real, and being out there and just putting myself out on the line and trying to catch whatever I can that's going to help. That's the main goal, the ultimate goal. All right, I'll stop rambling on again. Like I said, I'm not really good at this stuff. So if you get tired of listening to me, just fast forward until you get to the story. So without further ado, episode one, I'm nobody and this is my story, part one. The earliest memory I have of abuse, I would have to say, was my very close family member, my mother's brother, my uncle. The very first memory that I have of abuse is I was in my bedroom and he came in there and he cornered me and he lit, I don't know if you remember these or not, but I think they still have them at fireworks stands. Little TNT firecrackers, little red packs. They blow up like 100 or whatever. I don't even know what they are, or how many there are. But he had cornered me in my room, and I was, I really don't have any concept of the time. But I was 4 or 5, I think, I believe. It was in that time frame. A lot of the abuse that happened with my uncle was the four to seven range, is where I was at. So I was either 4 or 5. I think I may have been getting ready to start kindergarten. So I believe I was 4. Not really sure. Again, I was so young, I didn't have a concept of time. But he took these firecrackers and he lit the fuse and he held them right up to my face. And he had cornered me in my room and I was frozen in fear. I was absolutely terrified. I didn't know what the hell to do. I could feel the hot sparks of the fuse bouncing off my face. And it's pretty terrifying for a 4 or 5 year old to feel that. And you're at that age, what a firecracker is going to do, right? You know that it blows up. You know that it goes boom. And the only thing I could think of was if the fuse doesn't melt my face off from the heat, he's gonna blow my face off with the firecracker. This felt like an eternity to me, but I think the fuse on the firecracker only stays lit for about 5 to 10 seconds. And it felt like an eternity. Like I said, it was just ridiculously long. I could see the glow from the fuse in my eye, and I could feel the sparks hitting my face. And again, I was frozen in fear. My body went into fight or flight and it decided to fight. And I pushed my way away from him. And I think that, he realized, what was going on. So he was trying to put the fuse out, but it was too late. The firecracker started going off in his hand. I pushed my way out of the bedroom and I was standing in the kitchen at the time. And the firecrackers were going off. And, here comes my mom running into the room. And, she was just like, what the hell is going on? And I'm thinking, hey, here's my knight in shining armor, right? Here's my protection. And that just didn't happen. It didn't happen the way my child brain thought that it should. You know, my uncle was reprimanded for setting off firecrackers in the house. And then, you know, I was kind of drawn up into that, as if it was my fault. You know, I was never really asked what happened or anything like that. And it was at that moment that I locked inside my head and I thought, well, if my mom's not going to protect me, then nobody's going to protect me and nobody's going to listen to me. So, you know, I lived in that house with my mom and my dad. My uncle was just kind of staying the weekend or whatever. And then, you know, I, again, concept of time, I don't really know what happened. But I do know that I finished my kindergarten year there. And I, when I finished my kindergarten year, something happened and my mom and my dad, we had to move out of the house and we moved in with my mom's mom, which was not an ideal situation because my uncle who had held the fireworks up to my face was there. You know, so that's his house, that's his domain, that's where he lives. And here I am moving in, you know, to the bedroom right next to his. And he didn't really care for that too much, didn't really appreciate it, I don't think. You know, my grandmother was happy to have me, you know, it was a great family situation. My grandmother absolutely loved and adored me. It was awesome. But, you know, when I would come home from school on the bus, I would come running into the house because the only person there was my uncle. And I knew he was coming off the bus behind me. So I would run in the house and I would try to hide and try to stay away from him because I knew whatever I did made him angry. And I still to this day don't know what I did. And especially as a child, I was so confused and I was lost. And I didn't feel like I had any protection or anyone there for me. It was just kind of, you know, kill or be killed, I guess, is the phrase I would use. And obviously I was tiny and terrified. So, you know, there was no killing being done on my side. But I would get into the house and I would try to find a hiding spot, but I would never make it in time. He would always get in there before I found a place to hide. Usually he would hit me, he would kick me, call me names, you know, pretty much anything that he could think to do, he would do it, to assert his dominance, I guess, is the only thing I can think of. You know, we would play video games together and that was kind of a break from the physical abuse. You know, of course he would tease me and taunt me, and you know, a little bit of teasing is okay, I think. You know, people have different opinions on it, but I think, you know, a good, well-meaning, you know, joking around with someone is different than what I experienced, I believe. You know, I would be called stupid. I would be called all kinds of different things. You know, he would, again, when he was tired of playing the games, he would hit me. He would torture me, basically. And he would do whatever he could to make my life a living hell at that age. And again, I felt like I had no escape, felt like I had no saving grace. I felt trapped. And I think that's where I kind of ended up in my head, was just trapped and nobody was going to be there to save me. My dad was, you know, I mean, I've seen movies of him being around when I was little, you know, learning how to walk and stuff. But I don't really remember him being around a lot at this time, which is, you know, kind of crazy, but you know, I at that time I didn't know what adults did, you know. Just figured he was working all the time. So, you know, on top of everything that he was already doing, I felt like I was lost and I didn't feel like I had anybody there to support me. And you know, I grew up in a conservative family, so you know, it was really just different, I think. You know, a lot of people didn't really listen to you when you talked about being teased or being picked on. You know, people thought, well, that's just a normal part of life. You know, you'll be okay. And that might be the same in every family. I don't know, you know, the dynamic. I only know what I went through. You know, and it really left a lasting impression on me. So, you know, the abuse took a turn, I would say in a really weird way. You know, there was a lot of physical abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse. And then I would say that the best way, and really the only way I can describe it, is it got a little easier to deal with. It got a little less intense, I would say. You know, it was just it felt different. It felt different, and I really don't know how to explain it. I felt different on the inside. It felt like the abuse maybe kind of calmed down a little. And then I really had no idea, you know, what was going on. I still, you know, at that age, I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have been able to put the pieces together. I've only been able to do that, you know, as I've grown and as I've learned and as I've sought therapy and I've gone through therapy and I've talked about this and I've explained the situation. You know, it's pretty detrimental to a child's brain when they experience trauma like this. You know, people talk about chemical imbalances and stuff, and this is really a major part of it, is when the child is going through something and they never really learn how to deal with it and how to cope, and how to come out on the other side. You know, a lot of kids have that natural resiliency, but they still need somebody there, somebody that's going to protect them, right? Because children are the innocents, right? So, you know, it's one of those things where, I think back to that time and stuff that really sticks out to me as abusive. And I think back to that, and I just consider that as part of the reason why I am the way I am today. You know, there's a saying out there that says you would have grown into the person that would have protected you as a child. And I think that is 100% true. If I saw a child going through what I went through, I would definitely protect them, stand up for them, and take care of them. You know, and I think that really resonates with me. That, you know, you've grown into the person that would have protected you as a child, and I think that is a phenomenal, very impactful, phenomenal statement. So, you know, one thing that I really remember from the abuse when it changed, you know, like I said, it felt different. It felt easier to deal with. It felt like it was less, maybe. You know, I think back to what happened after that, and I really realized that that is where a lot of my damage came from. You know, because I think back, once he slowed down with the abuse and he started changing it, you know, this is the part that I really didn't understand then, and I still didn't understand as an adult until I started doing therapy. You know, he was grooming me, right? He had other plans, he had other intentions, more sinister intentions. He changed the abuse. And it became sexual in nature, you know, and he started making me do things that I didn't want to do. He started doing things to me that I didn't want him to do. You know, and of course, any predator will say, hey, if you tell, right, we're both going to get in trouble, right? And like I've already said, I grew up in a conservative family, and, you know, in a conservative family, men and other men don't, that's a no-no, right? So, I had that in my mind. I also had the fact that he said, if you tell on us, or if you tell on me, we're both going to get in trouble, and you're going to be in just as much trouble as I am because you're doing it. You know, and again, that went on for an extended period of time, you know, concept of time again escapes me because of my age, but it went on for, God, it felt like an eternity. It felt like a lifetime. But you know, it continued and it got worse. And one day, you know, I just realized, man, I really don't want to do this. And I've got to do something, you know. And again, I didn't want to tell my family. I didn't feel like my mother would protect me. I didn't feel like I had anybody that would be in my corner. I thought I would get in trouble. I thought that I would be judged, that I would be made fun of, because something happened with another boy. So I felt really uncomfortable. So I want to take this opportunity right now to make sure that you talk with your kids and make sure that they understand that, you know, nobody has the right to do anything to them without their permission and, you know, without a mother or father's permission. And we need to talk to our kids and we need to normalize, you know, if somebody is doing something to you, you need to tell someone, right? We need to make sure that we make it perfectly clear that people or the children understand that they need to tell somebody when something is going on. You know, so I didn't take that opportunity. I didn't feel like I had that opportunity. You know, so what I did was, I stood up to him, right? He was trying to do it one day. And I told him, I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I don't want to do it and I will not do it. And I think, and I'm super grateful for this, but I think at that point in time, he had maybe a feeling or a sense of fear of what would happen if I told or what would happen if he got caught. And I'm super grateful that he had a small amount of human decency in him because he, for whatever reason, stopped. Now, the emotional abuse and physical abuse kept continuing. He still hit me, still kicked me, still called me names, still, you know, did whatever he could to watch me hurt, right? It seemed like the more I would cry, the more enjoyment he got out of it. And it was pretty dark. It was a pretty dark time. And, you know, it's really kind of painful that a 5-year-old child, 6-year-old child, 4-year-old child, you know, whatever, however old I was, would have to go through that. And to feel like there's no escape and to feel like nobody's there for you. And, you know, that was my earliest recollection of abuse. You know, and then shortly after that happened, my mother and father, you know, they couldn't work anything out. They, you know, decided that since they couldn't work it out, that they were going to go their separate ways. And I don't think divorce destroys children. I think parents who can't get along and create a relationship between themselves and their child for the sake of the child, I think that's what really destroys children. You know, usually you hear that children are playing mommy daddy games, right? Mommy said no, so daddy will say yes. But it felt like the complete opposite. Anytime I was with my mom, she was down talking to my dad. Anytime I was with my dad, he was down talking to my mom. You know, and I mean, being that age, it just kind of really messed me up, right? But you know, that wasn't the bad part, right? The bad part was that I feel like my mother just ignored all responsibilities as a parent. Left me with my grandmother until I was 11 years old. You know, my grandmother did her best to raise me, and she did a fabulous job. She did amazing. She was always there for me. She always took care of me. She always made sure that I had everything I needed and even what I wanted. I mean, if I wanted something, she would get it for me. And I think her being that presence really helped me through that portion of my childhood until I turned 11 years old. My mother was in and out, mostly out. She would go hang out with friends and stay with friends or go see whatever guy she could see at the time and really, like I said, ignore her responsibilities as a parent. So it was pretty rough. Pretty rough. So like I said, I stayed with my grandmother until I was 11 years old. Something happened. I don't really remember. I think my grandmother, in a fit of rage, my mom had my first little brother. I think my grandmother, in a fit of rage, said something that she shouldn't have said to me, and I repeated it to my mom. And my mom decided that was it, and that she was taking me. So she took me and moved me in with her and my stepdad. And my stepdad was very, very emotionally and physically abusive to my mom. And the trend didn't stop when I got there. So he was pretty consistent. He would throw liquor bottles at her. He would hit her. He would choke her. Call her fat. Call her stupid. Wouldn't let her keep a job because he said that she was just out fucking around, and wouldn't let her go to work because he was insecure, because he was just a piece of shit human, and that's just the way it was. I mean, honestly, my mom was pregnant with her second child by him. I don't pass judgment on people who won't leave abusive relationships. I don't pass that type of judgment because I feel like abusive relationships are really hard to leave, and there's a dynamic there that a lot of us don't understand. So I just try not to pass judgment on that, and I try not to look at it any different way. There's a part of me that's like, I can't look past it because you didn't get me out of that situation and you knew what was going on, but you still remained in that situation. But since he wouldn't let her keep a job and he was too strung out on drugs and alcohol to keep a job himself, we ended up living in a home without water, without lights. Took a cold showers when they did turn the water back on. Took cold showers because the water heater obviously didn't work without electricity. We ran a extension cord, drop cord, whatever you want to call it, from the neighbor's house to get a light on in the kitchen to cook food on a kerosene heater. And these are my childhood memories. This was when I was 11, 12, 13 time frame. And this is the kind of stuff that I got to see. My grandmother tried to come see me, and my mom hid me in the bathroom, and she went and stayed inside the house, and my stepdad went out and met my grandmother, and my grandmother said that she wanted to see me, and he told her no, that she needed to leave. So then she tried to come into the house, and he smacked her across the face and knocked her off the porch. And then he went in the house and grabbed a gun and fired it into the air and told her the next shot was for her. And I was within 5 to 10 feet of this happening, and it really broke me as a child, and I didn't even realize it. It was destroying me mentally, physically. I was drained. I just didn't have any fight in me anymore. That's just happened to be where I was. That's really, my stepdad was my main abuser throughout my childhood. We moved around a lot. I went to 7, 8, 9 different schools, I think, as a child. And that was just from sixth grade to eighth grade. And I failed every grade. I made straight F's, but the teachers, instead of trying to figure out what was going on, they would just pass me because they didn't want me in their class anymore. So I kind of built up a reputation of a kid who didn't care about school and didn't care. I was kind of a class clown, I guess you would say, and a lot of the teachers just passed me to get rid of me because they didn't want to deal with it anymore. Nobody ever checked on me to make sure I was doing okay. Nobody ever asked, nobody cared. That's the way I felt back then, right? I remember specifically one time I was sitting in the floor in my bedroom playing PlayStation, and my stepdad came up behind me, and you know those pressure points that you have right below your earlobes, right behind your ears, right? If you push right there behind your jawbone and you push up on your ears, that pressure point right there, my stepdad would come in and he would take his thumbs and he would put them into those pressure points, and then he would physically lift me up in the air and hold me there by those pressure points. A lot of people think that I'm joking when I say this, but I can't feel those pressure points anymore. When somebody buries their finger into them, I have no feeling. It's just kind of going with the motions. Doesn't really change anything. Don't really feel it, like I said, and people can do it all day long, and it doesn't really affect me. It doesn't really bother me. But it's pretty crazy to, look back on my life, and to think about stuff like this. I experienced a lot of trauma. Living with another man that my mom had met, before my stepdad. He came home from work one day, and I was washing the dishes, and he took his belt off and wrapped it around my neck, and then pulled it tight and lifted me up in the air, and he said, "If there's a spot of dirt on any of those dishes, I'll kill you." And again, I just didn't feel like I could go to my mom. I didn't feel like I could trust her to protect me. So later on in life, 13, 14 years old, living with my stepdad and my mom, and just constantly being mentally and emotionally abused. I remember one Christmas morning, I got up, there's presents under the tree, and I opened my first present, and it was a video game. If anybody remembers NFL Blitz, I don't know if anybody remembers that game. Pretty awesome game. They had bought it for me brand new, and when I opened it up, it was already open out of the package, because my stepdad said that he had played it the night before just to make sure I liked it. It was a small thing, right, to open your present and to see that, this is supposed to be something that's brand new, but somebody has already used it. It's really a small thing, but it's really heartbreaking to think back to. I experienced a lot of different abuse, a lot of small scale stuff, a lot of big scale stuff. As a matter of fact, when I was 15, my stepdad made me drink Jim Beam and some type of beer. I can't remember what type it was, but he made me drink that, and I'm pretty sure that I got alcohol poisoning, but I can't tell you because I didn't go to the hospital. I passed out and laid in my vomit next to a fire, and he just left me there outside, and he walked back to the campground. And I just laid there all night long until my mother came and found me the next morning. And I remember them fighting about it or whatever, but obviously still left in that same situation. you know, so I was going through my time. I was in a dark place, so I was going through my emo phase, right? A lot of people don't know that about me, so I'm oversharing here. I was going through my emo phase. I was wearing all black. I was wearing black eyeliner, black fingernail polish. People think about me now and they're like, "Oh, there's no way." But I did. I did it. You know, and my stepdad was in and out of jail and out of prison for drug charges. He went to prison for vehicular manslaughter. All these chances my mom had to get away from him, she still stayed. You know, and I remember one time my grandmother, again, I love her, and she did an awesome job with me, and she, you know, did the best she could with a lot of things. But I remember one specific time, my first attempt at suicide, I was 15 years old. My grandmother had come over, and obviously this has been years since the gun incident, but my stepdad was in prison. So my grandmother come over and I walked out of my bedroom and I was on the phone with my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, my grandmother looked at me and she was like, "What are you wearing?" You know, I had black shirt on with holes cut in the sleeves, you know, a hole for my thumb. The sleeves went down past my hands, past my wrist. You know, and I had on black blue jeans, a black leather jacket. My hair was like really long. You know, my grandmother is like, "You are not my grandson if you continue to dress and act this way." So I immediately hung up the phone and I went to my bedroom and locked the door. And my mom was beating on the door, screaming, crying for me. And I took a knife that I had and I tried to cut my wrists. I attempted several times, but the knife was just a little cheap knife. And it just happened to not be sharp enough to even break the skin. Come to think of it, I don't think I'll ever own another brand of knife like that because it wouldn't cut anything. I was definitely trying. And you know, I was in a really dark spot, and then when I realized that the knife wasn't cutting, I opened the door and I handed it to my mom, and I said, "If this had been sharp enough, I never would have opened this door." And you know, for a lot of parents, I know for me as a parent, thinking about my children, if any of my children said that to me, it would have been a wake-up call for me. I don't think it was for my mom. I think she decided just to continue going down the path that she was going, and we stayed where we stayed, and my stepdad came back out of prison. You know, and it was pretty miserable. But he went out drinking one night. I mean, that's what he did. He would stay gone 3 and 4 days at a time. After he got out of prison for his last drug charge, he went out drinking with a couple of friends, and then he was on his way to pick me up to take me to school. I feel terrible saying this, but thankfully he never made it to me. But unfortunately, he did kill what he considered to be his best friend. They got into an accident. They were driving pretty fast, and they hit a handicap van that was driving around getting handicapped people and taking them to school. And he hit the van and killed his best friend. Never made it to me. But he went to prison for vehicular manslaughter. And then by this time I was 17 years old, and my girlfriend at the time, we were talking one night. And you know, my stepdad had been gone for a couple of months in prison, and my girlfriend and I were talking, and she was like, "Well, what about your dad? You know, have you ever talked to him?" And again, I was 17, so I had not talked to him since I was 5 or 6. So she talked me into calling him. I called him. And you know, it was kind of a surprise to him that I reached out. I told my mom I wanted to go see him, wanted to go visit. I did. Obviously, in my emo phase, I was wearing all black and all that. And my dad's wife said that she was afraid of me when she first saw me, because I looked really scary. And you know, but it never sounded like a problem when they talked to me, and they treated me so good, so great. And they asked me if I wanted to move in with them, and I thought, man, here's my chance, right? Here's my shot. I could have a good life. And then I agreed, and then when I moved in with them, everything changed. Of course, you know, my dad made me cut my hair, made me stop wearing all the black clothes. They threw all my clothes away. They took me shopping and bought me a bunch of Abercrombie and Fitch clothes, which was definitely not my personality. Still isn't my personality. For anybody who knows me, they can verify that. You know, it's pretty crazy to think that I was 17 years old and still in that mindset where I let people like that control me, because he didn't have my best interests. They were embarrassed by me. I get it. You know, they were ashamed of me. And I mean, that's just how it is and how it was. And you know, that's fine. Everybody has their own opinion, their own outlook, but I can't imagine, you know, being a father, I couldn't imagine treating my child like that. I think my kids, you know, have a freedom to express themselves. And I, you know, appreciate that they want to express themselves, and they trust me enough to tell me what they want to do with their lives and what they want to do to express themselves. And I think that, you know, we should be supportive. But you know, that wasn't the way he wanted to do it. So when I turned 18, I took the car from the neighbor's house that I was buying, and I drove down to my mom's house against my good judgment. And I moved back in with my mom and let the car go back. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, pretty much, I was working a job. I was paying rent to my mother and my stepfather. They were charging me $200 a week. So $800 a month to, sleep and shower there is all I ever did. Cause I was working a lot. You know, and I got tired of it. One night, and I just went out and I started drinking heavily. And after a few shots that I probably shouldn't have had, not to mention the fact that I was 18, a few shots that I shouldn't have had, I decided to go over there and try to go home and go to bed. And my stepdad met me at the door and subsequently kicked me out. And that's where my downfall started. I spent the next 6 months living in my car. I would shower at the community center. I'd sleep in the parking lot at work. And you know, it was a rough time. It was a really rough time. And it, you know, the downfall started there. And, just to let you guys know, if you want to hear the rest of my story, I'm Nobody, and this is My Story Part 2, will be out next week. And I will continue this story where we left off. And, you know, I look forward to you guys being there. Thank you so much for being here today. And I appreciate everybody listening. And hope you guys know that everything is going to be okay. And, you know, you're not alone. There's people out there that will help you. There's people out there that will help you. There's programs out there that will help you. You just have to take advantage. And sometimes it's a lack of knowledge of being able to take advantage of it. And, you know, I want to be able to share my story like I have for the last 45 minutes. You know, I really appreciate everybody who stayed and listened. And I hope that this is something that kind of resonates with you. I hope you haven't gone through the trauma that I have, but if you have, then I hope this really touches you. You listen to it, and maybe you'll want to share your story. So thank you guys for listening, and I can't wait to see you next week.